As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, hello there. This is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and I am your host, Liv. Once again, I am here with a conversation episode, but this one is a bit different. I spoke with Hannah Parker, who is perhaps better known as Historical Han, on TikTok and Instagram. Both of us are building careers around teaching people the ancient world via the internet, but at the same time, we're both going about it in fascinatingly different ways. I don't want to harp on how I'm, you know, the middle-aged millennial thing, but it's pretty true. And this is such an interesting example of the ways that different age groups both teach and learn about the ancient world, hence why I wanted to speak with Hannah. Plus, she's just supremely smart and cool and nice. So we talked not only about what it's like to teach things about the ancient world on the internet, how she does it through TikTok, and how she does things a little bit differently from a lot of TikTokers out there, for the better. But we also talked about Hannah's own specialty, which is studying the Greek goddess Tike, who's like fortune, but also specifically as she appears in the Near East during, I think it was the Hellenistic period and beyond. Can you tell I'm recording this after we had the conversation by quite some time? It's fine. But also because Hannah is doing her master's in archaeology alongside all of this. So we had she had so much to say about TK, who is somebody I have not talked nearly enough about. Huh. We talk history and archaeology, and I learned all these things about TK in the East. And honestly, I'm just always here to talk about the world beyond the Greek mainland, let alone just, I mean, the ancient world generally, you know. The East, though, the Near East is so fascinating. It was such the wider part of the Greek world for a time. And then, of course, they had their own stuff before and after. And I'm going to leave Hannah to talk about it. We talk TikTok and social media and people being awesome on those places. And obviously people sometimes being shitty in those places because God's at social media. If anything, it's a real mixed bag. This is a great episode. Hannah is so fun. She had so much to share. So let's let her just get right into it, shall we? Conversations, TK and teaching via TikTok with historical Han, Hannah Parker. Let's start with like what it is that you're doing with the ancient world, and like you're studying, I'm sure, a lot of stuff right now. Are you doing your master's currently?
Yeah.
Yeah. You use TikTok and all the other social medias to like talk about the ancient world. And it's really interesting to me because I like obviously use some of those. I did briefly try to be on TikTok and then I forget to go on it for anything other than like weird, I have a little secret account and a weird niche algorithm that I care about. And then I always forget to go back on my mythology account that I should. But like, other than that, social media is so interesting because I don't necessarily use it to teach so much as just to like kind of share podcast stuff and my like obsessive collection of pictures from Greece. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting to me, like the way you and other people, you know, doing that kind of work are actually using TikTok and other social medias to like actually teach people about the ancient world. So like, yeah, tell me about kind of what you're doing there.
Okay, so I make a variety of content about the ancient world on TikTok. Some of it's more like silly, funny stuff, and some of it is much more like serious education or like archaeology news stuff. So it's a bit of a range. It's a bit of a, if people follow me for one thing, they're pretty disappointed.
That's fun.
Yeah. I just kind of like stumbled into it. So it wasn't something that I like set out to do. I know everybody says that and it sounds really cliche, but I really didn't think about it being a serious thing. It was like a year ago, I had one very silly video go viral. And then I was like, huh, maybe I should do more of these. And then I only started taking it seriously in September. But yeah, it's been pretty wild to see how many people actually seem to care about ancient history online. Because, you know, in academic circles, you're so used to seeing people every day that like diehard classics fans. And then you go online and you realize that so many people are ancient history nerds, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I feel like you have such a similar kind of experience to what I sort of experienced, the whole same thing, except just in the podcast realm. Because I also like started it kind of on a whim. It's just like something to do. Like it was obviously intentional because you have to be intentional to start a podcast. It's different. But at the same time, I didn't expect it to be anything serious ever. You like put this content in the world and it turns out that there are like so many enormous nerds, or even just that people like, even if they're coming to this stuff kind of like from the periphery, they don't have like a background in it or anything, like they're still so keen to learn even the most niche things. Like that's one of the things that thrills me to no end. And I imagine you have similar experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. So like my research is super, super niche. And then when I talk about it, people are like, oh my God, I want to hear more. And you're like, really? Someone cares about this very niche area of ancient history too? It's not just me and my supervisor.
So what is your niche then?
Okay, so I'm going to say this in the English pronunciation, but I know Greek people out there are going to kill me for this. But I research the Greek goddess Tyche, or Tihi. I think it sounds silly in English. She was the goddess of fortune, as you well know. But in the Near East, she has a very unique set of like roles. When Alexander the Great went into the Near East and into Syria, which is where I mostly look at, he brought with him this goddess. But in the Near East, she became this goddess that, instead of just being fortune itself, became the personification of each city and the personified fortune of that city. So I am currently researching, like, to what extent is she actually specific when she's used, because pretty much every city in the Near East had a Tyche, but sometimes she looks more like Artemis, or sometimes she appears very similar to other key cities, Or in a few cases, it's actually a man, and it's the Syrian god or fortune figure called Gad. So that's sort of my research. I look at a lot of coins and paintings and stuff like that, statues, yeah.
That's really cool. I know the goddess, but I didn't know any of that kind of, that's so interesting the way that they change in the East. I just, like, all of these things thrill me to no end, just imagining all of the sort of, like, the intricacies, the niche, like, stuff that's even possible. And now I'm also curious how modern Greeks would pronounce the word. Like, does it mean something still in modern Greek? I imagine it does.
Like, I'm not sure, but they pronounce it Tihi, I think, which I always think is, like, oh, Tihi. Like, I think it's so stupid.
Well, it'd be more like a H, because, like, the ki sound, so it'd be like Tihe, I would imagine, or Kihi, Tihi. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with learning modern Greek, and I'm not great at it, but it is so much fun. That's really cool. Yeah, and she's such an interesting one, too, because I imagine, like, and I don't, this is probably, like, beyond your niche, but, like, Fortuna in Rome became, like, much more important than Tihe was in Greece. Mm-hmm. And it kind of sounds like it might kind of come from that, too, where she had kind of become a bigger concept by the time Rome could then, you know, have Fortuna be a similarly, like, large or more important goddess. It's just interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Tyche is, like, super big in Roman Phoenicia. So, yeah. But it's actually really cool. You might want to look this up afterwards. But at this place called Caesarea or Caesarea, I believe it's there, where she's done in the guise of an Amazon. So she's got, like, her, like, half boob out and, like, mini skirt on. And, like, I can't imagine the Romans being that keen on that. But, you know, there she is in her lovely outfit.
I feel like the Romans had to give in on a lot of things when you're dealing with in the East, where it's like, if that would never fly in Rome, but they just, like, kind of had to deal with it.
Yeah, that's like, so I was doing this numismatics course recently, and that's why I was in Greece, and we learned about Flamininus's coins in Macedonia, and the professor was like, this would never have flew in Rome. Like, he's only getting away with it because they were so okay with Alexander. Like, he would have been in big trouble.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Because, like, it all spanned so far and into so many other cultures that it's like, I had a conversation with Eduardo Garcia Molina like a while ago about the Hellenistic period. And it was really interesting learning broadly, kind of like after Alexander, the way that, like, the Greeks and Macedonians, like, spread into the East, and the way they kind of inserted Greek things but couldn't just, like, get rid of everything that was pre-existing. And it feels like so much like that. And then it also, that becomes, like, an area where you can have way more fun with things because you're not necessarily beholden to, like, the strictures of Greece or Rome, where both of those cultures were much more strict, certainly Rome even more so.
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of, like, the, like, Seleucid dynasty. I'm super into that. I love their coins. And I've also been looking a lot recently at, like, Greco-Bactrian coinage and the Indo-Greek kingdoms. And that's super, super cool stuff. Like, I love that they take these really famous images, especially, like, of Alexander's coins, and they, you know, sort of, like, regurgitate them in their indigenous styles. And there's actually some really cool coins that were inspired by Alexander that were found done by Celts in Northern Europe. They are really cool. And they're, like, really, like, you know, like, Celtic art has this very sort of, like, abstract, very stylized, like, look to it. And it's just really pretty stuff. I'm a big fan of how certain images get repurposed by different cultures and then shown in different styles. I'm secretly a big art ho. Not even that secretly. I'm a big art hoe.
So am I. That's, like, how I came to loving the ancient world generally, is through whatever art, you know, usually even just, like, Renaissance and things kind of generally around that time period of, like, the most beautiful stuff you'd seen. And you'd be like, well, where's that story from? And then it's kind of how I found an obsession with Greek mythology. So, yeah, I am very much with you, like, art history nerd equally. So, okay. I'm like, I obviously could keep talking about that goddess forever, but, like, I'm so curious about how that, like, you use TikTok and things. And, like, I find it really interesting because one of the things I found being on there, like, it's, there's, like, a really heavy mix of people who are doing stuff like you and, say, like Dr. Ellie Mack and Roberts, who are doing like really great and like accessible TikTok content, but that is also like steeped in accuracy. Yeah. Whereas like there's also a huge number of people who not necessarily are like, there's definitely a lot of people who are doing full-blown misinformation, no question. But there are also a subset of people who are like not doing explicit misinformation, but they also just make everything sound like the biggest fucking news in the whole world, and like everything should stop and explode because this thing was found. Like, there's this person, and thankfully I'm not going to remember enough, so I won't be like calling her out specifically, but she kept coming up onto my feed, and I would have to like scroll right past it because she drove me so crazy, because it was just like the most explosive thing. And then it was always based in Cleopatra, which might be calling her out, but like as if constantly like we had just found something like game-changing about Cleopatra. And I'm like, here's the thing about Cleopatra, like if we find something game-changing, it's not going to be just like this person on TikTok talking about it. And if it is just one singular person talking about something on TikTok, then it's not actually as big of a deal as they think. And one of the things I noticed that you do is like you kind of use some of similar phrasing that pulls people in, where you're like, there's breaking news, but then it's like actually cool and interesting stuff that's true and not like blown out of proportion. And that does not form a question, but like, I mean, I'm sure you've kind of experienced similar things. I'm like, you're, I imagine, intentionally being like, no, this is true. So kind of how do you like, yeah, think about that kind of stuff?
So I think I know what you're talking about. And it's like a very like common clickbait like trick to be used on TikTok, right, for views. You want to be like, oh, stop what you're doing. There's breaking news in archaeology. And I do the thing with my hands. And it's super, super cringy. But I mean, it works. And like, that's the frustrating thing is like, I don't think that people like me really want to do it like that. But it's like, our thing won't be seen unless we do stuff like that. There was one, it's funny you mentioned Cleopatra, because I did a video when they had that thing come out about Cleopatra's tomb. That was me doing like air brackets there, air quotations. And I feel quite ashamed at how clickbaity I was with that, I will fully admit. I was very naive at the time, and sort of like trying, I was like really desperate to get some viral videos. And I didn't lie in it, because I don't lie on TikTok. If I ever, you know, sometimes if I'm tired, I'll get something slightly wrong, but like I'll always comment and explain it. But I felt really bad about that. I felt really icky. And it's like, you feel very immoral. Like I'm neurodivergent. I have a very strong moral compass. So I feel very guilty about it. But I mean, it's, you know, there are some repeat offenders on TikTok who do that stuff consistently. And, you know, I think that someone like me doing using similar language, but being factually correct, or as factually correct as I can knowingly be, is good, because that rivals those videos. And the best thing is if you know somebody's made a video on a topic that's a bit iffy, and then your video does better, you're like wanting to compete with them because you don't want people to see the misinformation. But yeah, it's a weird one, because it's like you're drawing the balance between being factually correct and maybe coming across as boring if people aren't that keen, and then straight up using clickbait and people are going to get annoyed. So it's like a balance. It's difficult to get sometimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's why I kind of tried to phrase it in that way. And that's why I'm so interested in it, because I can see you doing that, like making sure that you're using the kind of language that's going to get you views because you need to. And that makes perfect sense. There's nothing wrong with that. And then also making sure that you have this kind of accuracy. And that's why yours stands out to me, because then I come across all these other ones where I'm like, this is hot nonsense. Like, you have to stop. Or like the people who do, you know, the fully clickbaity things, but then they record like 8 videos on, you know, they've found Cleopatra's tomb. And I'm like, no, it's one thing to report the news that happened with a clickbaity, you know, kind of vibe. That's one thing. And you're doing like 1, maybe 2 videos about this news, but you're talking about the news itself, which I forget what it was in that case, but it was like, you know, one very hedgy, like, hey, we found this thing that could maybe lead to this thing that could maybe be her tomb, right? Like, that's more of what happened. Whereas this person, and I'm trying not to like, I don't want to make this all about me just shitting on one person, but it's just like the example that always comes to my mind. But like making that into like 8 videos of we probably found Cleopatra's tomb, like there's an enormous difference, you know? And it's just too bad because like it all comes down to the same thing. Like I talk about this a lot of like the like pseudo archaeology stuff and the pseudo history stuff that becomes so popular. Like it's just all, I mean, it's all dangerous in different ways, but it's also just too bad because the actual history and the actual work that archaeologists are doing is super interesting and like super valuable in what it actually is. And somehow that whole little rant I just did led me straight into one of the ones I saw fairly recently. I feel like it was a little while ago now. My brain just doesn't know time. But the very big breaking news of archaeology, which is that they figured out that something was a dildo that they'd had for a while and they'd never wanted to call it a dildo before. So let's talk about that.
You know, this is funny because I should send this to you. I gave a presentation on that like 2 days before I went to Athens. That was my presentation for my heritage and media class. And I was like, the first Roman sex toy, how this phallic find was thrust into the media.
I'm trying not to laugh at the same time so I don't cut you off. That's very amazing.
But spoiler, I do not think it's a dildo, which is controversial, I know. And I'm not a dildoologist, but my humble opinion, I'm not quite sure. But I think it could be a puzzle, like a decorative puzzle. I don't know. Ooh. I don't know. I think the puzzle things, everybody else like, it's a drop spindle. I'm like, wake up. It's not a drop spindle. So for my presentation, I was like talking about how different outlets and different media platforms like publish that story about the find. And it was really difficult finding videos on TikTok, not because they weren't there, but because TikTok hides like inappropriate content. So I was searching like Roman toy discovered, like Roman and then like the aubergine emoji. Like I was like trying to find these videos.
That TikTok is so weird for that. Like, for all the states is so obsessed with China getting data or whatever, like you would think that they would love just how clean TikTok tries to be. And like, granted, people have found the most fascinating ways of getting around that. And I kind of am just obsessed, like anthropologically, with like how people handle TikTok censorship. But anyway, that's like my own comment. But that's so funny to have to do that. I love the idea of just like searching the eggplant emoji. Which also, because I'm so North American, like hearing it called, and I know that aubergine is eggplant, but the idea of it being an aubergine emoji is somehow incredibly funny to me. So thank you.
I'm glad that that gave you a giggle.
It's like, I mean, it's just because it is what it represents, hearing it called an aubergine is just somehow funnier. But that's really interesting. Also, like, I mean, I saw it on Twitter and then I saw your, I probably just saw it on Instagram because I've been really bad at going on TikTok. But like, so I saw, you know, it in a few different places, but I'd never kind of thought about how it was reported in so many different places. So we're like, was there a lot of kind of differentiating in terms of like who decided it was and was not a dildo and like how they wanted to handle it? And like, I'm so curious.
Absolutely everyone said it's a dildo. Every single person. So I believe that The Guardian were the first paper to break the story. And they also published a reply online a week later. And it was a local crafter that like emailed in and was like, no, it's definitely a drop spindle, blah, blah, blah. But that was the only sort of like, that was only an opinion piece. Every media outlet, every video, everything apart from like maybe some people on like Twitter were like, no, it's a sex toy. So my favorite ones, I'm just getting my thing. Veni Vidi Vici, Roman pestle found in a ditch could be a dildo. The UK's oldest sex toy from 2000 years ago is revealed, but splinters worry everyone.
You know, like, I do appreciate how much, you know, the ancient world can appeal to a broader audience just through the use of like, hey, maybe this was a dildo.
This one's good. It's from Vice. Ah, yes, this is a dick. Archaeologists may have found the first Roman dildo.
It reminds me of that piece, I think it's Greek, that like goes viral every once in a while because it's like a toy zucchini or something, a toy cucumber. And everyone's like, it's a dildo. And it's like, I think there's a lot of people who are really back and forth on whether it is or isn't. But it is, it goes like, I swear, just like a single tweet about it goes viral every once in a while just to be like, hey, but what was this? Like, I think it's like stone or marble or something, though. Even, you know, at least you don't get to deal with splinters in that case.
I mean, I was like trying really hard in my video to not smirk because I was just... Like, I was finding it so entertaining, and I was like, I think I said something about the wear and tear on it, and I'm like, smelling smack.
I mean, there's just so many opportunities there.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, like, okay, dildo aside, which is entertaining, but is there, like, specific videos? Like, what is a specific topic that maybe it's like surprised you that people are super interested in? Like, obviously people are always into Cleopatra and things like that, or dildos, but like, is there something that's like you would have thought it'd be like way too nerdy and people still love it?
Ooh, good one. Good question. I don't know about nerdy. Like, because this is the thing, is your videos on TikTok will go viral weeks, months after you post them. It's not always like a be all and end all if it does badly on the first go. So I don't really check them, because otherwise you could like scroll all the way back. So unless I'm getting like a massive surge of like comments on something, I don't ever really go back and check it. Unless it's something I'm like really attached to. Like if it was an ad or something, I'd want to keep checking. But I will say that I'm surprised by two categories of video. I'm surprised at like the sad history girly videos, and I'm surprised at the oh, but she was just like me videos, because those are like aspects of history that I always feel were very like a me thing. It's like, oh, I always get sad about history, or oh, I always think about somebody doing the exact same thing that I'm doing in this moment. But those videos have turned out to be the consistently best videos, and I really didn't think they would be. But
like what kind of things do you talk about in those ones?
They're not usually talking ones, because okay. I think, well, on TikTok, like the type of videos that are talking ones that tend to do really well are my archaeology news ones, or like I've done a couple on like I did a couple ads that did really well that were about like Boudicca and Cleopatra. I've done Zenobia, like those things do really, like women's history tend to be, because my demographic is mostly women, but like there's a balance on TikTok where your videos with like trending sounds or with like no speaking do quite well as your very, very engaging talking videos. But these like sad videos, I could literally just walk up to something in a museum and be like, oh, this is kind of sad, do a pouty face, and they do well. And it's like insane. And like, I did it when I was in Greece with the Parthenon, and somebody was like, why do you have your eyes like that? And I was like, this is just my face.
Oh, the internet. Okay, that is a great lead-in to the thing that I face so much. Like, I really don't do much social media content, and I am happy with that, because the podcast is more than enough. And every time I try to convince myself that I should be doing more, I get overwhelmed, so I just don't. But like the few times I've done, like, I feel like it's true on TikTok too. So like I've had a few TikToks that have done decently well. The only one I've ever done that went viral, it went viral in views, but not in likes. Like, people did not like it, but it got like over a million views, which just is weird. But it was like some dumb thing I did on a whim about like a tattoo. And I was like, why would I do that? It's mythology. This is my account, it's supposed to be mythology. And the one time I went viral is like about a tattoo. But the like myths ones that I've had that have done vaguely well is I got in on this trend like last year of like, oh, like what your favorite blank says about you. And I did a few for goddesses, and like people are so wild. And like I did one and I had to just like pick goddesses. And then people are like, well, what about this? What about that? And I'm like, well, I mean, I couldn't do all of them. Like, that's just how the internet works. What? And the way people get so angry or like super mad because I put one goddess of like as a boring one. And I'm like, oh my God, you people, do you understand? Like, these are, it's so interesting to me because they're clearly all over the internet and you're taking part, like they're watching these trends take shape and a bunch of people are doing these trending things, but it's like people will still find all these ways to like be mad that you did it some way. So, like, what are people mad about that you talk about?
People are mad about anything on the internet. Anything, everything. It could be your eyes. It could be the way you pronounce a word. It could be, like, a picture you choose to use. It could be, go shave your arms. I get that one a lot.
To the listeners, my face was horrified. I'm just trying not to ever speak at the same time. But oh my God. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it could be anything. Like, you just get, sometimes it's like maybe you can be like, yeah, okay, that's a little bit valid. Like, you know, that's fine. But a lot of, like, recently, I'll tell you something. So, like, yesterday or the day before, I posted a video about how Alexander the Great went to the oracle at Delphi, and she didn't want to work that day. She wasn't working that day. And he obviously wanted his prophecy, so he dragged her out by the hair until she said, "You're invincible." And I literally said, I said that, and then I showed like a series of paintings and statues and mosaics, and I said, you know, he went on to conquer lands from Greece to India and was deified. That's it. I didn't give an opinion. I didn't do anything. And people were like, he didn't conquer India. And then I was like, well, actually I said to India, like, you know, I'm not saying he conquered India. And I also got like a lot of hate for me saying I was trying to cancel Alexander the Great. And I was like,
yeah, way to go trying to cancel him. God, the nerve.
Somebody literally said, why are you trying to cancel Alexander the Great? What are you canceling next? Dolphins? It's like, dolphins?
Okay. I mean, one, the idea of canceling Alexander the Great is ridiculous. Cancel culture as a concept is fucking bananas. I could go on forever. I won't. But the idea of equating him to dolphins is something else entirely. Like, the man was a warlord. Like, that part's true, cancellation or not. Like, that's an objective fact. He spent all of his time conquering people. Like, that's amazing. People are just the way they need to be mad. Like, the internet astounds me, and I'm so glad that I am in podcasting because people have a lot less access to tell you things. Like, you can't, I mean, Spotify briefly, well, they introduced it broadly, and they just like turned on commenting on podcasts. Yes, your face is accurate. And they like vaguely told us, but then they just turned them on. And one day I just went and I had like 4 comments, and the first one I saw was just the word trash. And I just am like, you know, I don't think we need to be able to comment on podcasts. I don't think that's necessary. It's actually why I podcast, because I don't want to hear from people all the time. My neurodivergence results in me really not being into chatting with strangers on the internet, like literally at all. I really have to push myself all the time. And like, just the way I don't want that. Where was I going with that? I don't even know, because the internet is just so wild. Oh, like the few times I posted some and like people would be getting angry. It's so interesting the way that, like, I think it's a TikTok generation thing too. Like, it's very Gen Z. This idea of like, also people are going to bug me for saying Gen Z and not Gen Z, but guess what? I'm Canadian. It's fine. Like, the people have these connections now that they feel to some of the deities, and I'm going to be like really careful with how I speak right now, because I am not judging. Do what you want, feel how you want, believe what you want. However, the people that come to me angry because I talk about ancient Greek gods in the context of their ancient sources and factually state the things that are in ancient sources that might make a god look bad, and then I get like yelled at for that, is truly wild. And I will never be able to wrap my head around it. But like, or I am really supportive of like, I feel like I'm saying some shit in this episode. I'm really supportive of like the way that people have taken on Medusa as a symbol of survival of sexual assault. I think that's amazing. I think it's valid. I like to talk about it a lot because I think it's important. I also stand by the idea that like that version of her is actually the most ancient that we have, that she was a survivor even in the most ancient Greek sources. However, there is also like a subset of the internet that I now experience all the time who just like, it makes these like cut and dry statements as if there's like no other option, and it comes from TikTok, I think, pretty specifically, and like that a generation that is like taken on a thing and made it like unavoidable. Like, I have posted a picture of my tattoo of Medusa, and every single time somebody will comment suggesting that means something about assault when I put it on my body, and like they just assume and comment, and I'm just like, it does. I mean, it is like not, you know, I just the way people feel like they just need to like say things about that stuff, regardless of like what the person who is actually posting it has had to say, really blows my mind. I've absolutely talked in circles throughout this, so we'll see what I keep in. But like, mostly I'm just like in awe of people like you who can handle that much of the internet, because I think I hate it. But like, what's maybe like to bring this back, maybe something entertaining, my god, like, have you had complaints from people that are just so ridiculous that they stick with you because they're so funny? Because I feel like I've had some things like that myself, and they can become really entertaining.
Oh, I mean, one I get a lot is blue hair or green hair, you've lost my respect, or why would I listen to you? And like, I made one about Easter not being pagan, because spoiler alert, Easter is not pagan. It drives me insane. And they were like, yeah, but those nose rings are pagan. And I'm like, what? God. I get so many comments about how like my appearance like devalues any education that I have and any like right to talk about anything I have. And that's happened to me not just on TikTok, although it's very prominent on TikTok, on Instagram, and also in real life. So I'm used to it.
I mean, that being a woman on the internet is so fucking specific. Like, it is just bananas. I'm interested. Like, I'm not like, you know, in the academic side. It's something that I like used to think about, because I was in, like, I did my undergrad like over 10 years ago now, and I've always been like a vaguely alternative person in different kind of varying levels over the years. But like, it's so interesting to me the way that that somehow is still going on. But the idea, I mean, God, it's like, yeah, the idea that because you have nose piercings and green hair means you're not knowledgeable. Like, I think it's, again, a podcasting thing, because like, people see me, but they don't, like, on my Instagram, it's mostly just like people who already listen to me. So I really don't get shit until I post a reel, because those go broader, and then I get wild ass people saying wild ass things. But I'm thinking about it now, and like, I don't think I've ever gotten anybody talking about the like my tattoos or anything. So to hear that is just like, still, I feel like it's not surprising, but it is such a bummer.
I do think this is maybe me dishing out some inside thoughts on the community, but I really think it's hindered me, like my appearance, massively. Like, I see people with smaller accounts who look more conventional, and I think they do better, and I think that they get more opportunity, like in the real world, or like more opportunity from like companies and stuff. Like, I definitely think that my appearance is a bit of a hindrance, because I used to have like colorful hair like when I was a teenager, and like, I've had my piercings, I mean, I've had my septum pierced since I was 16, like 7 years. Like, I've looked like this for a long time, but I stopped dyeing my hair when I was like 17 18, and then I only redid it a year ago, and then I was thinking, I was like, god, maybe I would have had more if I just kept it up, which is sad. But I do think, like, on the one hand, with young people, I think it's a big thing, because it's like, oh, she looks like somebody I could sit next to in a class, or like, you know, relatable, like a young person. But I think that in like my broader marketability is definitely lowered by how I look a lot. I really do think that, which is sad.
That's so depressing. That bums me out so much. Like, so, I mean, I think about this a lot, but I come at it from like, I think the best way of saying this, like, I come at it from the other side. Like, I'm on the other side of it now, because I am like turning 35. My undergrad was ages ago. I didn't go further, but like, still, I experienced the same kind of thing and the same kind of fears back then. Like, I was less tattooed, but I've always been like a pierced tattooed weirdo with weird hair my entire life. And now I'm coming at it from like, in the last 6 months, I've gotten like 15 tattoos. Like, I really just went from spending a lot of my life thinking that I couldn't go too hard because I wouldn't be taken seriously, to realizing that I've been taken seriously so I can do whatever the fuck I want. And like, yeah, I think I found it to be so freeing that, and like, I even like my, the pictures I still use for the podcast are from a couple years ago. And I'm like, I've got like, you know, a fraction of the tattoos visible in them. And I'm like, I'm waiting patiently to like take new headshots so that I look as tattooed as I am now. And so I've like, I found it to be so like nice and empowering. And it's so depressing to hear that it still does exist on the other side, where like, even in 2023, you could have to think about that. It's really sad. And I hope that you don't ever have to like actually change anything, and that it just, you can keep powering through until you're on the other side and then really do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, the thing is, so like my absolute dream on here, I'm speaking it out, I'm manifesting. I really want to make documentaries. I want to make documentaries about like Near Eastern, Middle Eastern, and like Asian, like Western, Central Asian cultures. Like that's my absolute passion. And I think that, you know, I don't know how the, I don't know how the British public would respond to a young girl with a bunch of piercings and colorful hair, but I'm hoping that it could happen. I'm really hoping it could happen one day. But we'll see.
It should, like, oh my God. Well, I'm going to, you know, be nearby, helping in whatever I can, being supremely tattooed with a bunch of nerdy shit literally all over me. So whatever help I can provide by just being like fellow alternative weirdo in the classics world. I just feel like there's like a lot now. Like I think of Ellie too. Like Ellie's often got weird hair and Ellie's super tattooed. And like, I know she's also kind of on the other side. Like she and I are similar age and she's got her PhD and stuff. So I feel like it's another kind of, you have to like reach a certain kind of threshold and then somehow it just matters less. But I imagine she would have different things to say, because like I'm not in the UK, which I think also like I'm, you know, the West Coast of Canada, and there's like, I think it's probably a very different, you know, situation. And I'm not trying to be in academia or like, you know, I'm just a podcaster, but I too like want there to be like documentaries, real documentaries. I talk about this a lot, of like actually good ones that aren't pseudo history. But like, I also think that people like you should be creating them, because I don't know. Oh, I'm annoyed still by the, that you like have to deal with that. It's like pulling me back to being 23 and worrying about that stuff, because you shouldn't have to. I'm going to try to pull it back, but also keep doing it. Don't change your hair. God. We'll cut that out. But like, it's true. But like, I don't know, what's like your favorite video, or like, is there something you're super proud of? Like, I'm just so curious kind of about your whole experience in this realm, because it's so similar to what I do and also so different at the same time.
Yeah. So, what am I super proud of? I don't do them very often, but when I do videos about my research or like broad areas that I'm interested in, because I you know Arc Thought or Steph, well, she basically, we met up for the first time recently, a few months ago, I don't know, and she joked and she was like, you don't know anything about ancient Greece. And that's like low-key kind of true. Like, I don't touch ancient Greece with a barge pole, pretty much, because I'm like, everybody knows about, like, well, I feel like ancient Greece is quite saturated on TikTok, so I don't really talk about it. I think I should. I think I've recently been like dipping my toes in with my like Athens content, but I kind of don't really bother with that. I really enjoy when I talk about artworks, because like art's obviously like my genuine passion. And I had one video that I was really proud of that I did, of the painting of a couple from Pompeii. It's really famous. It's like, I think his name's Terentius, and him and his wife had a bakery, and she's there with her stylus, and she's so proud she can write, and she stood in front of him, and like, it's a really sweet thing. And on that, I'm really proud of my Fayum mummy / Roman Egyptian mummy painting videos, because I'm really, really into them. But I will say, they're a bit too controversial for me. Sometimes I don't talk about it because it's just not worth it. But yeah, I really, really love them. My art history like analysis videos, I'm a big fan of.
I love that. What's so controversial about the Fayum paintings?
Race.
like just the facts of it?
Just, well, I kind of don't really touch on it. I kind of say, oh, Roman Egypt was very culturally diverse. You know, you had the indigenous Egyptians from obviously southern Egypt versus northern Egypt, even in very, very ancient Egyptian times, were, you know, a big range of skin colors. And then I say with the like Greek influence and then the Roman influence, like everybody was, it's like a multicultural melting pot. Because I've actually like researched this a fair bit. So I'm pretty confident on my knowledge. And I always try and make it palatable. But people will latch on to anything I've said. And a few times I've had people maybe tell me to stay in my lane on that kind of stuff, which is a bit uncomfortable. But I normally just don't respond to it because I'm not interested in getting in a fight with anyone. If they want to believe what they want to believe, I'm surely not going to change their mind. So it's easier to leave it. But mostly it's really positive feedback from them. People like it. They can always tell when I'm super excited about something. I think it's like my eyes stop looking dead. They're like, oh, suddenly there's life.
Yeah, no, and that's why I tried to phrase it that way, like just like facts, because that's the thing that I think people do tend to get most angry about is like, and either it's like one way or the other when you're trying to talk about the fact that the ancient Mediterranean was a pretty large place with a vast range of people and their skin tones. Yeah, it's sad that that can be controversial because you're just like, this is what people looked like. Look, there are paintings of them. Like, it's proof. It's visually right there. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's, that's wild. I mean, I obviously like don't, I mean, I do go beyond Greece, but typically with guests and things and conversations more so than anything on my own. And also I just, it's not a visual medium. So and you can't comment.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
people that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in exactly. to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right. which is different than empathy, yeah. right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already yeah. see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is there stuff, okay, that you like do you ever spend your time kind of debunking or like specifically addressing people who say nonsense?
Recently, I tend not to because I find, you know, I think it's a healthier thing to just put out positivity rather than engaging with negativity. But I will say that I came across this woman's account like a month ago, and she is, in my opinion, batshit insane, batshit crazy, and she believes in a ton of weird stuff about ancient Egypt and the ancient world in general, like sort of extraterrestrial stuff, and, you know, it had to have been a higher being to have help them build these things. And she goes to Egypt and she takes blurry photographs, or somebody on her party takes blurry photographs that definitely weren't blurred on purpose, to justify that there's energy around statues. And she made a video about the Egyptians, and not even just the Egyptians, it was just like a weird video. She talks about like megaliths and all this stuff, and I'm like, you're trying to intentionally mislead people here. And I got quite a lot of hate from that. And she was a verified account. And she has no relevant qualification. And yeah, that kind of didn't go down that well for me, which was very unfortunate. And like the thing that upset me the most is, like, I haven't said this, but I'm a huge nerd for the Nabataeans. Because I grew up in Saudi Arabia. My dad still lives there. So I'm like really big into like Arab like history. And she had a video about the Nabataeans basically being like, their rock cut tombs at Petra were too advanced. They couldn't have done this. And I'm like, do you know how, like, I said to her in the video, I'm like, I am so sure you're not intending to be racist. Absolutely. But these views are inherently racist at their core. So you need to go back and address like why you believe that, and like, you know, deconstruct your biases against like non-white and non-Western culture. Because I find like that's such a problem. And I sort of like I thought I handled it nicely, but her videos ended up getting millions of views and now she's got a massive account. So I mean, she's much better off on it than me. She's earning lots of money. So it's not, in my opinion, it doesn't really pay to stitch people and debunk them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely can see that, because it's, I mean, I've had like minimal experiences of like similar things, just even from doing like a handful of Instagram reels. And I just cannot imagine when you're on TikTok and you're getting so much more interactions and things, because TikTok is just inherently like bigger in that way in terms of like interactions, but also like the hate and stuff. But I completely understand that being like the one topic that you'd think to engage with, because I mean, I should think about it being just as much on TikTok, but I've been coming at that exact issue in so many ways through, you know, quote unquote documentaries. There are so many documentaries and things like that, you know, that talk about these things, and it's so difficult and so like sinister, because on the surface, yeah, like you're saying, it's not coming across as racist. But as soon as you break down what is actually being said, it is just so inherently racist. It's like all the ancient alien theories, right? This idea that people of Africa and, you know, and the East and like couldn't create these things. And so it had to be somebody else. And people will just be like, no, I just believe in aliens, or like, I know, I just believe in like higher whatever. And it's like, no, but by doing that, because you're almost always only talking about people who we now see as not white, you know, like there's just so much inherent racism in there. Like if you're only talking about these things in relationship to Egypt or Saudi Arabia, like, yeah, there is so much going on there. And it is, you want to come at it like as a way of like, hey, I know this is not your intention. But as soon as you try to tell somebody that that's what they're doing, even when you're trying to do it in the nicest way possible, like people just lose their shit. Like I deleted a reel once. I forget even what it was, but it was something in that realm of like, hey, there are these like racist ties to these ideas, even if you don't realize it. And like people just like, it just became so much vitriol on my account that I was like, no, I can't, like my mental health, I can't deal with that. Even if I don't engage, like it stresses me out. It gives me such anxiety. And like the only ones I've had that I kept up and I just kind of like stopped engaging with was like, I've done that about Atlantis, right? Like the sort of like the racist ideologies that come with Atlantis, even though you don't realize you're doing it. And I do think it's important to talk about that stuff. But yeah, people just get so mad, like as if they have this like really strong tie to what is a like essentially nonsense, especially when it comes to something like Atlantis. But it's just, oh, it's wild. But that one's such a bummer. Like also, like I don't know how verification works on TikTok and stuff, but the idea that a verified account is able to just go around saying shit like that is so depressing.
Well, I would love to know like what the verification process is, because this person, when I found their account, they were much smaller than mine, and they were already verified. And I don't know, it's like weird because not that many people on history TikTok are verified. Not very many at all, even ones with huge followings. So not me, but even people with like really, really big followings aren't verified. And then if they are verified, it's often somebody who has no relevant qualification and maybe is leaning into the clickbait fake stuff. So I don't know how they decide to who to give those out to, because I said to her in the video, I'm like, you know, you're a verified account. People are going to trust what you're saying. If you're making out that you know about these things, people are going to think you're qualified. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so depressing. I don't know how any verification works, honestly. Like, I've tried to get verified, not on TikTok, obviously, because I have no following. But, like, on Instagram and stuff, it's so weird. Basically, if you're not, like, traditionally famous, it's, like, doesn't even matter. But I don't know on TikTok, because that sounds like just a person saying stuff. I do think, though, and I know, like, only vaguely about it, but I know that, like, the country you live in matters a lot when it comes to like, getting anything out of TikTok. So I wonder about that and like whether she's just American or something.
She's British, but.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't even count.
Yeah. I mean, what I wonder about is like, you see, sorry, this is so not really relevant, but like influencers, like traditional influencers, like beauty gurus and stuff, they'll get verified so quickly. And I'm like, what about like, there's so many like professors on TikTok that have big audiences. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they've written books, they've put in documentaries, like give them the little tick. Like, how hard is it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, oh my God. Trying to get, like, I think all of this is such a good example, though, of, like, why doing what you're doing is important, even if sometimes I imagine it feels like you're kind of screaming into the void, because the bigger accounts that are spouting nonsense get way more views. And it's the same with, like, those, you know, quote-unquote documentaries. They get all the money because they sound so impressive that people want to watch, but the reason they sound so impressive is because it's all bullshit. And so, you know, like that same thing ends up happening on social media, and then so the bullshit just gets louder. Like, I think the first time I ever tried to do a reel that was like based in talking about history was because I came across this guy who is like one of those white men on the internet who just like talks really loudly and really confidently, and so people believe him, like, and he sounds like he knows what he's talking about. And he had this video on Homer, and he was like, oh my God, he was like, started with the Mycenaean Greeks, and he's like, this is, you know, Bronze Age Greece. Mycenaeans had these incredible palaces. They were super, you know, advanced. They had all of these things. And he talks a lot of accurate things about the Mycenaean period. And then he's like, and then out of nowhere, a dark ages descended, and like something happened and they all just disappeared and we have no idea where they all went. And then there was a dark age, and where they lost the ability to read the written word. And like from that period of complete illiteracy across the Greek world, the singular man Homer came out and like developed the whole modern or like ancient Greek language and wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. And like, it was like, I feel like people get away with saying stuff because they hedge it in, like they start talking about things that are accurate. Like, yes, the Mycenaeans were cool and they built palaces. And then it just devolves into this like absolute nonsense of so many ways. And I like did a video about that. And I remember I also tried to do a video on like how just the term Dark Ages is like inherently problematic and all these issues. And even that got a bunch of hate. And I'm like, literally, how can you find a reason to hate the fact that I'm just saying that like Dark Ages is problematic? And like there actually wasn't even a quote unquote Dark Ages in Greek history anyway. It's literally called the Early Iron Age. We know what happened. We have records, blah, blah, blah. Like, and people still manage to get angry. And it just blows my mind. But yeah, like how... I don't know. How do you, this is more personal question for me in that, like, how do you be okay with people being assholes to you on the internet? Can you give me tips?
Absolutely. It's really hard. I am a very sensitive person. I am autistic and I cry almost every day. Not even when I'm sad, if I'm very happy, if I'm overstimulated, I'm a crier. And I originally found it really hard because it was kind of genuinely, there were two points that my account really blew up in December and in January, February time, like tens of thousands of people like overnight. And that was really scary because you didn't see it coming. And then you suddenly, I have this lovely woman on TikTok called Seema who does like art history content, and she told me that once you hit over 100,000 followers and once your videos hit over 100,000 views, that's when the hate hits. She was like, that's the sweet spot where you're gonna get mean people. And the way that I genuinely have dealt with this is creating a persona, because Han the person isn't historical Han the character. And like, it's like two hats. You kind of like have your smiling face on camera and then you get off and you're like, oh, okay, I'm done for the day. Like, it's literally like it is a job, and it's like a uniform for the job. You put on your like makeup and you put on your clothes and you do your hair nice and then you do the video and then you decompress from it. And I think that as long as when you're reading the comments back, you're in that mindset that you're that person and then you can switch it off, it's okay. There have been a few times where something really bad's happened and I've gotten really genuinely upset. But I mean, not that often. Most of the time I'm just I box it. I compartmentalize my sort of character, which is a bit weird, but.
No, I think that's brilliant. And I'm so impressed that you can do it. Like, I think I also, because of how long I've been doing it under like what I do, like it would be hard to do that at this point because my podcast it's both like, I do have a podcast. I want to call it a personality, but like it's sometimes vaguely that, but it's a little bit more of like masking neurodivergence too, of like, I can turn on the ability to talk to other humans. Sometimes it takes a while. You watched at the beginning. But like, you know, I can like turn that on, and then definitely the decompressing happens after. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to like hide for a while. I've so like tied the podcast to be me that it has been harder to kind of separate in those things. And like my social media has always been very like me, but also like, you know, I have a very specific things like that, the way I am on my Myths Baby Instagram versus, you know, my personal one. I don't know. It's also fascinating. I just find social media so fascinating. I also think that like generationally, like I'm kind of just in awe of like, I don't want to make it sound like I'm like, you know, oh, you're, like I'm old, but like I am honestly impressed by people generally in your age range who can do this stuff, because I think that you, like, also because of just like what existed when you were younger, like you had to grow up in a different way. I think there's like benefits and definitely flaws to it on both sides. But I think it really like affects an ability to like compartmentalize, maybe, or like things like that. I don't know. I'm just generally fascinated by social media and like how people handle it and like what they enjoy and what they don't. Like, I think I'm just coming at this purely out of like, I'm really interested in kind of all of this. I want to hear about Athens.
It was amazing. It was my first time properly in Athens. Like, I went, you know, like for like one day on a cruise with my parents when I was like 11. And I have this like cringy photo of me at the Parthenon. And I was like, oh my God, that's so sweet that at that point I was really excited about classics, like getting into it. And then I was like actually there as like a legit adult researching. And like, I thought it was insane that I got to research at like one of the most prestigious institutes in Athens. Like, that was crazy, like living amongst these academics and like this huge tradition of academia there. That was incredible. But like, in terms of sites, like, we were run ragged. Like, we were working like days and night every day. We had like 2 days off. We went to lots of sites. I had lots of classes. My favorite, I don't know if you've ever been to Thorikos. So no. Thorikos is about an hour away. And it's this, obviously, this site that has a beautiful theater. And it's a really quirky theater because basically, you know how normal Greek theaters are a C shape? This is kind of like straight, but like curved slightly. Instead of being a true C, it's kind of like a square bracket, but slightly like smooth. And people, so that's how, that's the shape that really, really, really old Greek theatres used to be when they were wooden. So people, but this is stone. And archaeologists were stumped. They were like, oh, this has to be a really, really early, like, stone theatre. Super cool. And then some recent excavations, I believe by a Belgian archaeological team, have discovered using pottery fragments, I believe, that the theatre is Hellenistic and it was done in the old style.
Interesting. Yeah. God, I love nerdy things like that. And then this idea that you can have these beliefs, like what you're saying about, you know, they thought it was really old. And then it's just like, no, they just made it look old. And we don't know until we know. And then we get this like kind of new information. I love it all. It's really fun.
I feel like you would have loved it. So the group of people I was with were just such incredibly kind and passionate students, like PhD students and master's students and professors. Like, it was such a lovely, genuinely lovely vibe. I was really worried it would be scary, but we were at Thorikos and we just sat in the theater. I was like sitting there and I was just looking and you can see the sea, and it was just so, like, everybody was like kind of like smirking at me because I kept saying everything in Greece was romantic. I was like, this is so romantic. And it really was. And then this guy on our group, he goes down into the bottom of the theater and he looks at us and he starts reciting Homer in ancient Greek. And I was like closing my eyes and like looking out, and then I looked out into the sea and I was just like, God, like, I can't imagine like how long it's been since like those words were spoken there. And oh, it was like really like hit me in my soul. I don't know about you, but this might sound weird, but my soul felt so at peace in Greece. In a way that it hasn't felt in other places. I don't know.
I feel that in the most real way. But like, it is the place that keeps me whole for like the rest of the year. And yeah, like, I am happy there in a way that I cannot fully express. I completely understand.
I found myself getting so emotional, like, around Athens. Like, I just felt very intense feelings. I don't know. I feel like I'm a very sappy person and I feel like I really absorb other people's energies. And I think that when you see something so magnificent or like so impressive in person, that it's just like, oh my God, like, somebody made that, somebody did this, somebody lived here, somebody's doing exactly what I'm doing in this space 2000 years ago. Like, I when I went to the Temple of Poseidon at Sunion, that was intense because you're on a cliff overlooking the sea. I mean, I love the sea. And you're just like, yeah, you can see why this space was a religious place. Like, and then you see all like the hundreds of years of like graffiti as well. Like graffiti gets me in my soul because I'm like, oh, these real people just put their name here.
Yeah, thinking about those things, I mean, it's just mind-boggling. So when I was last at the Temple of Sunyan, which I've been twice, and you're right, it's like, it's the most incredible because the sea is just right there and it's just like right at that cliff. But I was kind of told generally where, like, because Byron, Lord Byron, did graffiti on that temple. And I have like a fancy iPhone and I was able to zoom in and find it. And I have this like crystal clear photo just from me zooming in and finding that graffiti. But it's like amidst all this other graffiti. And it's interesting because a lot of people find that the graffiti itself so depressing. And like, modern graffiti, I agree to an extent on ancient sites. Like, I don't want anyone carving stuff into that now. But like, when you know that it's something like Byron, where you're like, no, but this is like 200-year-old graffiti. Like, that is so interesting in its own way. And then you do get stuff that is so much older than that, too. It's still interesting to think about those kind of like the stuff that like just remains then forever.
I really love ancient graffiti. So like I get super emotional about like Pompeian graffiti as well. Everybody does. Like if you can't tell me that it doesn't move you to see it. And some of the stuff I freaking love. It's like really raunchy or like, you know, kind of inappropriate stuff. But the one that gets me every single time is the one where the guy's like, oh, if anybody doesn't believe in Venus, they should look at my girlfriend. And I'm like, oh, if only somebody spoke about me like that. Like, come on, you set the standards so high.
I know. I don't know enough about Pompeii and I've still not been. I think about it because have you read Elodie Harper's books?
No, I haven't.
Okay, they're so good for one. Also, she's like the nicest person in the entire world. It's ridiculous. But also, my knowledge of Pompeian graffiti is through her novels because she loved to include things like that. Like, I almost wonder whether that particular graffiti is in her novels because she went through and like found all this real graffiti and like wrote it into the story and like, you know, the character like sees something. I know there was one kind of like a funny back and forth graffiti where somebody's like, this guy sucks. And the guy's like, nah, he sucks. And just like a little bit of like, you know, but it's so amazing. And Pompeii is so unique because we get that in a way. I mean, Pompeii is perfect for that in so many ways where we get so many things that we wouldn't get otherwise. I don't know. Is there kind of anything that you, I don't know, like feel like you've, I don't want to make this cheesy. I want to say like, if you feel like you've learned anything from what you do.
I think that the cheesy thing that I will say is that today I've learned what I've learned is like, you know, I don't know if you felt like this way as a kid, but I always felt very isolated. Like I was very, you know, I was bullied. I was very, you know, undiagnosed neurodivergent. Like I was a very lonely kid and I used to just sit there with my history books and it was kind of a bit sad and pathetic looking back on it. But like I used to talk about it a lot more, but I actually went to uni to do biology and I was miserable, absolutely miserable. And I feel like pushing myself to do something I didn't want to do gave me the realization to be happy. And then finding social media as like my creative outlet, because I've always felt like I'm a very creative person, but I'm not very good at drawing. So I kind of always have thought, oh, I'm not creative. I'm just not getting it. I'm not understanding myself. And I really do think, I used to think anybody can do what I do. And then I've realized not many people can. And it really is like a special trait. It's like a special ability to engage people with your passion. And I think that if I could go back in time and sort of tell myself as a kid, like, you know, this is the right thing and you're not going to be alone. Because, I mean, I've got 176, I think today, 1,000 people that have chosen to follow me. And you've got, I mean, way more than that, people who listen to you, you know, every single day. Like, that's amazing. And like, you know, I just think it's really sweet that I, although it took so long of being sad and lonely, that I've kind of found my place in the world. I've kind of found my little special part. And every, you know, every mean comment I get on TikTok, I get hundreds, if not thousands, of nice ones. And I mean, like, Dr. Ellie Mack and Roberts is like, oh, I listen to you when I'm with my kids at night. And like, or people often say, like, my kids like your videos or stuff like that. And it's all like, oh, I never felt like I could pursue archaeology, but your videos are making me like live that vicariously through you. And like, that means so much to me. Like, it sounds really cringy, but I don't know, I feel like I'm doing what I'm meant to do. Which, yeah, I don't know. I feel very at peace with where I'm at.
I love that. I feel very similarly. And I do think, too, like, it might sound cringy. I don't think it does. But, like, I know what you mean. But I do think, like, what you're saying about the way that it impacts other people, though, like, in the kind of long term, is such a source of pride. And I'm glad that you feel it. Like, it took me a while to get there. So I'm just like after the fact glad that you were able to get there. Because it is so good to feel like proud about what you do and to feel like you are doing this thing that like is kind of specific to you, like that you are, you know, you found the thing that you do, this particular, you know, you share the ancient world through this particular means and you do it really well. Yeah, I mean, it's really rewarding when you get to hear from people who are like, oh, you know, you've reawoken my love in the ancient world, or, you know, inspired me to go to school. But yeah, like this, like the thing that you can kind of inspire people and have them tell you is so nice. And it is like, I feel this a similar way to you where you're saying, you know, like for every like bad comment you get so many nice ones, and my reviews are like that, and I try to make sure that I remind myself that, because sometimes the bad ones sting and then I have to be like, okay, no, but like look at these like 10, you know, really beautiful ones, or when like particularly nice ones come in, you know, it's just, yeah, like it's so rewarding. And like, you know, influencers on the internet are a very specific type of thing, and I think a lot of them, you know, I don't know. I think that the type of influencing that like you and I do is supremely beneficial, particularly compared to the wider internet and like the things that you're always kind of fighting for space on the internet and fighting for people's attention. And a lot of the time you're fighting against stuff that like is entertaining, sure, but doesn't actually like hold value long term. But like the stuff you're doing holds value. And so the fact that you're able to get attention from these people who could be watching, you know, Get Ready With Me videos or makeup stuff, like the fact that you're able to take their attention and turn it on to ancient history is really fucking cool. And so, yeah, I'm glad you're proud, because you should be. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, talking about the ancient world is so fun.
I was just going to say, like, I always felt that people who do what I do, or like who are big on social media, I always thought they had to be a certain brand of person. You know, I always thought it was like, can I be someone who's like tall and skinny and blonde haired and blue eyed and very conventionally pretty? And I have never like fit that mold. And like, I spent a lot of my like teenage and like early adult years constantly trying to get attention by how I looked, like constantly trying to put on like loads of makeup. Like, I love a winged eyeliner. You will never catch me without my winged eyeliner on. But like, I used to be obsessed with how I looked to try and make myself be more palatable to people. And now I don't have to worry about that, because people aren't watching me because I'm pretty or I'm, you know, attractive in any way. They're watching me because they think I'm interesting, and like they care about what I'm gonna say. And like that, you know, there are still a fair amount of times that I'll be like, oh, I wish I looked prettier. And like, sometimes I look at myself when I'm filming and I kind of dissociate a bit and I'm like, I look really strange there. I don't know, I think it's very like soothing. The older I've gotten, the more comfortable I've gotten with, yeah, it doesn't matter that I'm not the prettiest person in the room, as long as people care about what I'm saying and I'm honest about it. And I've never lied for anything, and I would never, ever lie about anything on the internet for any sort of, like, you know, influencing. Influencing is such a horrible concept because it's just about, like, rinsing your followers, I think. And I could never do it.
Well, obviously, you have a lot of places where my listeners can follow you because that is your whole thing. So why don't you tell them where to go?
Okay, so if you want to follow me on TikTok, where I post every single day, my username is @historical_han_, which I know it's a bit of a mouthful.
My podcast is called Let's Talk About Myths, Baby. Let's not talk about mouthfuls. Don't worry.
I know, like, literally this morning I was like telling people, I was like, yeah, I'm going on Let's Talk About Myths, Baby later. And they were like, what? And I had to repeat it like 3 times. But yeah, if you want to follow me on Instagram, my username is @Hannah_Parker_. But if you type in historical Han, I should come up.
And I will link to all of these things in the episode's description so they can also just click on those. But thank you so much for coming on. This was really fun. I'm very glad that we made it happen. But thank you so much for being here. It's been really fun talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's crazy, like, listening to some of your podcasts during, like, COVID before any of this was real for me. And now here I am.
Nerds, nerds, nerds. Thank you for listening, as always. You were the best. I loved having Hannah on, not least because, I mean, we've been chatting on the internet for, like, ages, but also, like, we just had such a fun conversation about so many things, both the actual history and mythology of the ancient world and what it's like to teach those things to people on the internet, which is sort of fascinating in itself. And make sure you follow her on Instagram and TikTok. Can you tell I'm a millennial? I said Instagram first. Sorry. They're linked in the episode's description. She's on Twitter too, but unlike some of us, she's really all about the video. And gods, do I respect that and absolutely love that there are so many amazing people out there, Hannah being high among them, teaching via video so that I don't have to do any video ever. Huzzah! We all win. As always, I've linked to everything in this episode's description. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is written and produced by me, Liv Albert. Michaela Smith is the Hermes to my Olympians. Gods, she handles so many things. I just love her to death. She does everything I ever want, and it's the best. Stephanie Foley works to transcribe the podcast for YouTube captions and accessibility. The podcast is hosted and monetized by iHeartMedia. Help me continue bringing you the world of Greek mythology and the ancient Mediterranean by becoming a patron. You'll get bonus episodes and more. Visit patreon.com/mythsbaby or click the link in this episode's description. Thank you all. You're super cool and fun. I am Liv, and I love this shit.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.